This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When you're a teenager, a record album can have a profound impact on your life. 33 and a Third is a new series of short books, each one written by a musician or critic about the album that had the biggest effect on his or her life. Some of the albums are Dusty Springfield's Dusty in Memphis, Love's Forever Changes, Pink Floyd's Piper at the Gates of Dawn, and The Smiths' Meat is Murder. The book about The Smiths album is the only novel in the series. Its author is my guest Joe Pernice of the band The Pernice Brothers. Morrissey, who was the lead singer and songwriter of The Smiths, was known in the mid-80s as the crown prince of mope rock because of his somber themes and lyrics. This melancholy is echoed in the music Joe Pernice writes for his band, such as this song, Everyone Else is Evolving. That's the Pernice Brothers. I asked Joe Pernice to read a passage from his new novel, Meat is Murder, set in 1985. It's about an unhappy teenager who feels a strong emotional connection to the music of the Smiths.
We, meaning Ray and I, with the emphasis on the I, felt like we lived in the middle of nowhere, a place where a comeback radio single could make Yes or Deep Purple kings of the airwaves again. An overwhelming majority of the kids I grew up with were weaned off their mothers onto classic Sticks and Stones rock blocks. Did the small group of us who liked faggot British music feel like we were any better than them? Of course we did. Amen to that, brother. The following exchange illustrates the nearly religious and potentially violent musical loyalty of some of my peers. I said, "I think the Smiths are a much better band than Kansas." He said, "You better not say that up at the park on Friday night, or you'll get your ass kicked. What are you, a fag?" No, I was not a fag, and thankfully the park was not one of my usual haunts. Getting our hands on a new Smiths record, and issued on a major label no less, another victory, reassured us that there was a lot more out there than the hard rock our older brothers tried to score to. Sure, we were trying to score too, but we were younger, and the Smiths were new. Youth beats tradition, like rock beats scissors or paper covers rock. If suicide, AIDS, or the bomb didn't get us, we'd outlive our elders and cash in on the benefits and misfortunes of having a greater amount of history to learn from. It gave some of us a perspective that made the rock titans of yesteryear look, well, dumb. And whether it was true or not, Morrissey sang like he was as miserable, terrified, and as poorly designed as the rest of us. He captured it perfectly. We figured any teenage kid living through those Reagan years who said the Smiths were too miserable for them was either a liar, an imbecile, or so thoroughly messed up they had no idea just how miserable they were.
That's Joe Pernice reading from his new book, Meat is Murder, part of the 33 and a Third series of tributes to albums, and this one is a tribute to the Smiths' album, Meat is Murder. So, Joe Pernice, before we go any further, I want you to choose a favorite track from the Smiths' album, Meat is Murder, and tell us why you're choosing it.
I would have to say I would choose The Headmaster Ritual, which is the opening track of the record. I think it's probably the best pop song written of the 80s, and I'll stand by that.
Why? Why?
Well, the melody's great, the music is really catchy, and the message, Morrissey's message of alienation and pain is just perfectly articulated, and it's written from the perspective, I believe, of a person in a private school in Manchester, and when I heard that record, it just spoke to me perfectly.
Okay, so this is it. The Smiths from the album Meat is Murder.
Jealous of you, same old jokes since 1902.
That's the Smiths from the album Meat is Murder, which was originally released in the mid-1980s. And my guest, Joe Pernice, has written a new semi-autobiographical novel that's about why this record so meant so much in his life. So from the reading that you did of your novel, it sounds like it was seen as being very uncool in some circles to like the Smiths. What was uncool about it?
I think Morrissey's style and his personality. He was a gay celibate man, and that didn't really fly too well in where I grew up. So he was definitely an outsider, and the music wasn't hard, and the guitar playing had a lot of kind of chorus effects on it, and you know, if it wasn't really heavy and driving, then it was, you know, kind of passed off as light music.
Now, you're not gay. What did you relate to about this gay celibate lead singer?
I think it was pretty much, I think...
Oh, I should mention celibacy was not your ideal either.
No, it wasn't, actually. I think just that he was such an outsider. I think just the feeling of not being able to fit in was something that could translate to a lot of different social circles, and it certainly did to mine.
Was music a large part of your identity, and do you think it was that way for the other people you knew in high school, too, that the bands you liked said something about who you were, something very important?
Definitely, because at that time, you know, you're forming your personality or you're becoming an adult, and there's really not—you really don't know who you are, and as soon as something speaks to you, like music— it was something you could hang on to, and it gave you a personality in a way.
The track that you chose to play for us,
yes.
The Headmaster Ritual, is about being in school in England. You went to a Catholic high school in the Boston area.
Correct.
What did you like or not like about your school?
Well, Catholic school for me was a bit stifling. Probably not as stifling as it was for someone going to a private school in Manchester, but there wasn't, in my school, there wasn't a lot of art. I think there was maybe one art class, and taking religion classes was a big part of it. And, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, religion's just not a huge part of your life. At least it wasn't for me. I think... When I heard a song like The Headmaster Ritual, where here was someone on the other side of the world talking about this kind of miserable state they were in, it gave me at least something to relate to, and, you know, start to feel like, oh, I'm not alone out here in Massachusetts. There are people all over the world who have kind of the same, if not similar, situations.
My guest is Joe Pernice of the band The Pernice Brothers. His new novel is called Meat is Murder. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joe Pernice of the band The Pernice Brothers. His new album, Meat is Murder, is an homage to the 1985 album of the same name by the Smiths. It's part of the series of books 33 and a Third. When you got really depressed, would you want to hear depressing music? You know, like music depression?
I think I did. I think I've always been attracted to stuff that is a little darker. And I've given that a good amount of thought as to why, say, the Smiths, who, you know, tend to be pretty dark, why they are so appealing. And the music is what I turn to, finally. The answer's in the music. The melodies are beautiful. The playing is beautiful. And I started to think, you know, if someone could make something that beautiful... Even though the music itself was a vehicle for lyrics that might be kind of I wouldn't say hopeless, but dark. I think a person who is able to make something that beautiful is not really ready to throw in the towel, you know?
Choose another track from the Smiths album that is beautiful in the way that you've just been describing.
I would probably say That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore.
Okay. So this is from the Smiths' Meat Is Murder, originally released in the mid-'80s.
Park the car at the side of the road. You should know time's tide will smother you. And I will too. When you laugh about people, who feel so very lonely, their only desire is to die. But I'm afraid it doesn't make me smile. I wish I could laugh. But that joke isn't funny anymore. It's too close to home and it's too near the bone. It's too close to home and it's too near the bone. More than you ever know.
That's the Smiths from the mid-1980s album Meat Is Murder. And my guest, Joe Pernice, wrote a new semi-autobiographical novel about that record. It's part of a new series of books called 33 and a Third, in which people write about their favorite record. And Joe Pernice is a singer and songwriter, musician himself, and his band is called the Pernice Brothers. Well, let's get back to talking about your novel, Meat Is Murder. One of the things that this album was to you was a bridge to a girl that you had a crush on, and this was her favorite album. Whose favorite was it first, yours or hers?
I would say it was probably hers.
And so when you heard the album, how much of what you were hearing was your feelings for her?
Oh, probably a lot. And again, a lot of this is fabricated in the book. It's not exactly me, but I'll pretend it's me for a minute and say, I think a lot is attached to the music. You know, it's all about the timing. A great album appears at a time when someone is very impressionable, when there are potentially significant things going on, like a real serious love interest, and people cannot help but attach the things together. They've done it, you know, music is one of those things where, you know, people can remember, oh, I heard that song when I did this, or the first time we danced was to this song. And, you know, it might not even be a particularly great song, but it takes on kind of epic greatness.
Yeah, and you're right, in your novel, the trick was to somehow convert our love of the album into love for each other. well put. So is it this way in real life for you, that you had a crush on a girl who also loved the record?
Oh, many.
Now, we've established that one of the reasons why you really loved the Smiths when you were a teenager is that they sang about depression, they sang about alienation. They wrote, you know, melodies that you loved. You liked their musicianship a lot.
Yeah.
But you really did respond to that sense of depression and alienation in their music. Now that you're a songwriter yourself, do you feel like you write songs, too, that are about alienation and depression?
I think I do. I do enjoy exploring that side of myself. I don't know why, but I actually do enjoy it. I have a tendency to look at the possibilities, the darker possibilities in situations, you know, and why that is, I'm not exactly sure. But the act of writing songs, and they tend to be dark, delights me to no end.
Now, you went to graduate school with the expectation, I understand, of teaching English. Why did you change your mind about that and become a full-time musician and songwriter?
I was playing music while I was in graduate school just for fun and with a little combo and a small record label, an independent record label in the early 90s, you know, said, do you guys want to make a record? And we said, sure, why not, thinking nothing of it. And maybe they pressed 2,000 or 3,000 copies of our record. And before I knew it, there were, you know, record labels all over, coming from every angle, trying to sign us. And I, at the same time, I started to really enjoy the process of songwriting. Up until that point, it was like a fanciful type of thing. But I actually got into the craft and the method. I enjoyed writing songs. I started to really take a lot of pleasure from it. And the two things coincided, the offer of a record contract and my real kind of burgeoning love for songwriting. So at that point, I just made a decision. I'll take a detour for a year, maybe two, I don't know, and see where it goes. And I've kind of never looked back.
Morrissey lives in Los Angeles now. Have you ever met him? Do you know what he's up to?
I have no idea. I've heard, you know, he's one of those characters where there's so much gossip about him. I tend not to get wrapped up in that. It doesn't really interest me that much. I've never met him. I think I would probably be very nervous around the man. I was talking to someone, and I said, do you think he'll read my book? And they said, oh, yeah, he reads all those books. He hates them. He'll hate your book, too. So I guess I'll be in good company.
Well, I'd like to close with a record from the Pernice Brothers. Why don't we hear something from the latest Pernice Brothers CD, which is Yours, Mine, and Ours. Should we hear the opening track, Weak a Shade of Blue?
Sure, sounds good to me.
Do you want to say anything about it?
Actually, I think it is. My wife has said it's probably one of the more hopeful tunes I've ever written, which I think is kind of nice. But other than that, I'll just let it speak for itself.
Joe Pernice, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.